Thinking Liberty, Episode 1.
Welcome to Thinking Liberty, the podcast that explores lifestyles of freedom-minded individuals. Join us as we discuss work, hobbies, health, learning, and more while living a travel-orientated lifestyle. Be curious, be open, be inspired, be free. And now, here are your hosts, Zach and Sarah Varnell.
Hey everybody, welcome to this episode of Thinking Liberty. We're coming to you now from our mobile studio here in West Memphis, Arkansas. I'm Zach.
And I'm Sarah. In today's episode, we're going to interview Marcy Herr. She is currently located in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. She's originally from Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and she graduated from Penn State with a Bachelor's of Science in Education and Public Policy. And then she also has a Master's in Educational Theory and Policy, Comparative and International Education. She moved to a rural town in Perlis, Malaysia with the Fulbright English Teaching Assistant Scholarship Program. In her role there, she regularly taught English classes, but then she also engaged with the community in various ways that she'll kind of share with us later on. And then following her time there, she moved to Kuala Lumpur and transitioned into her role as a program coordinator for the Malaysia English Teaching Assistant Program, where she's currently helping support other young Americans who are working in their positions as ETAs.
Yeah, I really love hearing about how much she's gotten to travel since moving to Malaysia.
Yeah, it's been a really cool journey for her.
But before we get started on all that, let's give us a quick update from us. Right now, we're in West Memphis, Arkansas, like I said, but we've been using this as a jumping off point to visit Memphis, Tennessee. And, you know, this has been a great trip. I think we've, both decided that this is one of the nicest RV parks we've stayed in.
Yeah, I'm ready to move here.
Yeah, we're right on the Mississippi River, and it's, you know, just great walking out every day and being able to see the river and the barges going up and down.
Ollie has certainly had a blast.
Yeah, he loves the water and chasing geese and whatever else happens.
That's a dangerous life.
So what about you, Sarah? What are some of the highlights you think from Memphis so far?
I think really it's just been exploring the culture of Memphis. It's easy to think of America as not really having a culture, so it's really cool to be in cities that have so much culture, really getting to see some of the blues and where it started, being on Beale Street. It wasn't what we expected, certainly, but it was an experience, and it was just interesting to see all of these really old bars that have just been there and had some of the greats visit. Yes, all the history. We went to a brunch where they had a live blues band, and that was really neat.
The food here is great. That has been one of my favorite parts, and probably I could say that for almost any city, is that the food is the highlight for me.
Yes, checking out the local food and the local beers is definitely one of the benefits of traveling. We stopped at Hog and Hominy, which we discovered on a list of like 100 best pizza places in the U.S. And I can tell you, they definitely did not get it wrong.
Yeah, that was good.
And the service there was great, too. Our server, she was really amazing and gave us several suggestions of places to go. She also told us to check out the Wiseacre Brewing Company because Zach had ordered a beer from there. Unfortunately, we probably won't have time to check it out, but we'll definitely have to hit that spot up on our next visit.
Yeah, this is a place we're definitely going to have to come back to. There's so much that we've done, but there's so much that we still want to see.
Yeah, and even though this area isn't really, from what we can tell, it's not great for hiking, we did manage to find a couple of places to go hiking. We also went and visited Meeman Shelby Forest State Park, and it was really good. They have several long trails. They've also got a trail for horseback riding, and we did a trail that I think was about 4 miles.
I think so.
And we took Ollie, and he really had a blast. And we expected it, because we're in kind of a flat area, we expected it to be a pretty easy flat hike. But we were surprised that there were a couple of really good hills. So it was a little challenging, still fairly easy, four miles, but a little challenging. So that was good. And then we also saw an advertisement for Spring Festival. So
can't resist.
No, we can't. I guess we're a little bit of addicts when it comes to festivals. So the next day, we drove back out and checked out the Spring Festival, and there were some local bluegrass musicians playing live, and some food trucks, a lot of artists, and all they got to walk around and sniff things and got to greet people. And I think one person even had treats for him, which happens almost everywhere we go. He just loves it. Yeah, I think that's...
I think that about wraps it up. I mean...
Oh, Central Barbecue?
Oh, yeah. Can't not mention that. Yeah, we got pretty lucky where we got into town and, you know, we knew we wanted barbecue in Memphis and we wanted ribs specifically. Yes. So we look up and, you know, something that has decent reviews is Central Barbecue, and it's relatively close to us to pick up. So we order Central Barbecue and we kind of go crazy. We order way too much food and we're eating it for maybe 2 days. But it turns out later that that's one of the most highly recommended barbecue joints in Memphis. And I mean, I agree. It was great. I loved it and I miss it. And I kind of want some more right now. So.
Well, maybe we'll just have to order it again. But... Yeah, I mean, we'll definitely have some links to some of the places that we recommend on our show notes page. If you ever do make it to Memphis and you're in an RV or you want to camp, definitely check out Tom Sawyer RV Park, because even though it's not in directly in Memphis, Tennessee, it's just a quick drive over the bridge into downtown. And it's very peaceful and quiet. There's not a lot of noise. Everyone here is really friendly. Like you said, we're right on the river. We weren't even on the row that was directly on the river, but we still had a direct view to the river. You know, it was completely unobstructed. In several days we worked outside. It was gorgeous weather. So definitely check it out if you ever come to Memphis, Tennessee.
All right, well, enough about us. Let's hop into the interview with Marcy and hear about Malaysia.
So thanks for joining us, Marcy, and thanks for being available so quickly.
Yeah, you bet.
So let's get started with a little bit of your college experience. If you just want to tell us a little bit more about it at Penn State and a little bit about what choices you made that kind of led you to Fulbright.
Sure, absolutely. So like you said, Sarah, I went to Penn State and graduated in 2014 with my bachelor's degree in education and public policy and my master's in the same thing, education policy, but with a focus on international education. And at that time, I was pretty unclear on what I wanted to do with that. And I had a combination of experiences during my time at Penn State, some related to policy and politics, others opportunities to travel abroad to India, a little bit of research experience. And so it was great to have a taste of many different things, but I still wasn't quite certain on what I wanted to do with my degrees or where I expected them to take me. And so Fulbright was really perfect in a sense that it combined a lot of my interests, like international relations and education, while at the same time giving me more experience to really figure out what I want to do.
Cool. And let's back up a little bit. We mentioned it in the intro, what you're doing, but in your own words, just tell us what's going on with you right now, where you're at and what you're doing.
Okay. So in 2015, I was a Fulbright English teaching assistant in Perlis, Malaysia, which is a small rural state. And I was a teaching assistant there for 10 months, just not only teaching within the school, but then also just trying to engage with the community as much as possible. And I just loved my experience enough to renew my grant and stay on for a second and now third year, but in a different capacity. So I now am a program manager for the Fulbright Malaysia program, and I live in Kuala Lumpur. And in my role as a program manager or a coordinator, as we call it, I'm here to support the 100 Fulbright ETAs that are coming here for 10 months from America every year to teach English throughout the country. And so my role is pretty multifaceted. I do a lot of programming events for the ETAs, and just generally checking in with them, making sure that they are safe and happy and are adjusting properly to the culture here.
Sounds really challenging and rewarding at the same time. That's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
So when you were first starting this process and applying to Fulbright, what do you think made you stand out and what was that application experience like?
So first of all, for the application experience, it takes pretty long and at least for Penn State, I know it's different for every university, but you initially apply to your school, and after they review your application and interview you, they decide whether or not they want you to move on to the second round, at which point they recommend you, and your application is reviewed by a panel put together by the State Department, and then sent on to a third and final round to the commission, or the country that you applied to. You can actually only apply to one country, and so it was difficult to narrow it down to Malaysia. But Malaysia really stood out to me because of the diversity in the culture here, as it combines Chinese and Indian and Malay cultures into this really beautiful mix. And I've enjoyed experiencing all that Malaysia has to offer. And I think that as an applicant, I stood out because I did have a little bit of a taste of being abroad. And for the Malaysia program specifically, that's something that's really important to us, just so that we know that the applicants are somewhat experienced and have a little bit of an understanding of what it's like to be abroad. And additionally, since the Fulbright applicants will be teaching English, it's important for us here in Malaysia to see that they have a little bit of, not necessarily classroom experience, as they are mostly recent graduates, but some sort of background in working with youth, whether that's in an after-school program or a summer camp or something along those lines. And since I had a little bit of that, I think that that also helped my application to stand out.
Awesome. So it sounds like it's a really long, kind of stressful experience actually applying. Did you have any tricks or things that you used to help stay calm and maintain your sanity while you were waiting to hear back?
For me, I was given the advice by the fellowships director at Penn State after I had applied to just kind of put it in the back of my mind and not stress about it, because at that point it was really out of my control. And so I was busy enough with my senior year anyway that I tried not to really think about it, because I applied in October and didn't hear back until April. And by April, a lot of my friends already knew what they were doing after graduation. So that was pretty stressful and a long wait. But I lined up other options as well, just in case. But Fulbright was always my number one choice.
Cool. So you mentioned some of the reasons that you chose Malaysia and applied to go there. But were there any others? And what got you interested in just traveling in general and wanting to do this?
You know, I never thought that I could live abroad. But here I am 2.5 years later, loving every second of it. I think what originally made me interested in moving abroad was just because I knew that there was a lot out there to experience. And like I mentioned before, not really knowing what I wanted to do post-graduation, moving abroad and giving myself the opportunity to explore a completely different avenue was a little bit of a leap, but something that I was really excited to do.
So tell us just some stories, I guess. Like, what's been your best experience there that you would have never gotten maybe had you chose a different country or had you just stayed home in the U.S.?
Some of my favorite memories are really just times that I spent in my community in 2015 with my students. So whether that was swimming in a local waterfall or going to a night market with them, I always really enjoyed that. During the Muslim holiday of Eid, I was always welcomed into the community to celebrate that with them, and they were eager to teach me their traditions and the meaning behind those traditions. And so that was a really special experience for me, because it's nothing that I had ever been exposed to before. And so I actually fasted with them a couple days during Ramadan just to show kind of my appreciation for their culture and interest in learning, because I think that as a teacher, especially abroad, it could be easy to lose sight of the fact that I'm also here to be learning. And so I tried to regularly remind my students that they were just as much my teachers as I was theirs. And it's been neat, since I still live in Malaysia, even though I'm fairly far away in the capital city, it's been amazing to be able to return to my community and continue to develop the relationships that are still there and kind of go back to my Malaysian family. And like I mentioned before, Malaysia is super, super diverse. And so another experience that I had was in Malaysian Borneo in the state of Sarawak. They celebrate Gawai, which is their rice festival, every year. And being able to experience that last year and to drink their traditional tuak, which is rice wine, in longhouses was pretty surreal.
That sounds amazing. Hopefully someday we'll get over there and get to visit and experience some of that too.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
What was your classroom experiences like? What were the sizes of the classes and kind of the general age? Do you have a specific age that you taught, or was it kind of diverse in that way too?
So all 100 of the schools in our program are secondary level government high schools. And so the students range in ages from 13 to 17 years old. My class sizes were around 25 students and with a pretty wide range of English abilities. And so that challenged me to then be able to find ways to connect to my students that didn't speak English at all, and then also the ones that were reading English novels for fun in their free time. But as a teaching assistant, my job was to really just work alongside the Malaysian teachers and incorporate any games or engaging activities into the curriculum so that the students were more eager to pay attention and learn English. And another part of my job that I really liked was just trying to empower and encourage them to be more confident and to realize that it's okay to make mistakes and that it's all just part of the learning process, because that's something that my students were always very shy because they kind of were afraid to mess up when they were speaking with me.
So did you guys exchange book recommendations?
Not quite.
So you mentioned that they were kind of shy to speak English with you. Did you find that it was helpful to share kind of some of your concerns or, I guess, fears or insecurities about speaking their language as well?
Yeah, definitely. And I realized pretty early on when I arrived there that being shy wasn't really an option. And, you know, I, as the foreigner in their school and in their community, there was so much visibility around me. But because they shied away from that sometimes, I felt like that was really a lost opportunity there to be able to connect with them and exchange culture and learn from each other. And so then I kind of took it upon myself to be the one to approach them and also kind of help them feel more comfortable in interacting with me.
Yeah, whenever we went to Japan, one of the first things I noticed was that people were too shy to speak English. And, you know, I was hearing from one of my friends that lives there that they know a decent amount and could probably hold a conversation. Just almost nobody wanted to do it. And I didn't understand that at all until I learned a tiny bit of Japanese and I was too embarrassed to use any of it. So now I get where they're coming from. So one thing that's been really cool for us to watch you do is you've gotten to travel to a few neighboring countries. So how have you been able to take advantage of that, and where have you been?
So because the Malaysian culture is so diverse, they recognize Muslim, Buddhist, and Hindu holidays in their academic calendar, which results in a lot of time off. And so while I use some of that to interact with my community and spend time with my students, I also did have the chance to travel around the region. So in 2.5 years, I've been to Japan, the Philippines, Indonesia, Singapore, Thailand, Myanmar, Sri Lanka, and the Maldives. And wow. I've been able to make that happen because traveling in Southeast Asia is fairly inexpensive, and being independent and only having to really worry about spending money on myself, that's definitely helped, and just saving where I can to be able to afford those trips has been definitely important to pay attention to.
Cool. So have there been any real challenges or things that have been hard for you to adapt to in Malaysia?
When I moved to Malaysia and moved to the rural community, that transition was actually much easier for me than moving to the big city here in Kuala Lumpur. And I just attribute that to being a small town girl myself. I was much more comfortable in a rural environment. And additionally, I was surrounded by a community of people that were so eager to interact with me and share their home with me. And so I immediately just felt like I was a part of their family. But then moving to Kuala Lumpur, it was a lot more isolating and new to me. And so that was very challenging, but I've grown to love that as well. It just took time. But I would say one of the biggest challenges about living in Malaysia specifically, some people might think has been the heat, but I love the climate here. I really enjoy that. I would say an interesting challenge in KL has been meeting people who just put America on a pedestal and just kind of worship the American culture sometimes more so than their own. And that makes me a little bit uncomfortable. And so it's been, I've been put in a neat position in terms of my friendships here to show interest in other cultures as well and kind of just learn more.
Yeah, we've definitely experienced that culture worship in our travels as well. It's definitely kind of an unnerving, uncomfortable experience because, I don't know, typically before this last year, I viewed the U.S. as not really having much of a culture, that is just kind of a, you know, mishmash of every other culture and that we just kind of borrow here and there. But it wasn't until we really started traveling to some of the other states that I really started to see that America does have some of its own culture, but it's still, you know, really cool to kind of see other people's perspectives and then also share with them, oh, well, people in America worship Japan's culture or China's culture too. And so it's kind of an interesting exchange there.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. So as far as next steps, is this your last year in Malaysia or do you think you'll continue another year?
Good question. So this is my last year on a Fulbright grant. So this will be my third and final year working where I'm paid through Fulbright. But I'm looking for ways to stay in Malaysia, and whether or not that comes to fruition, I'm not sure, but I really don't think that I'm ready to move back to the U.S. quite yet. And I really enjoy the experiences that I've been able to have here. And I think one more year would be nice to have, but, this current contract runs until November. But regardless of where I live, after this year and looking forward to 2018, I want to work in some sort of program management role where I'm able to work within cultural exchange or international relations or education in some capacity, and ideally an intersection of those various fields.
So I think that's kind of a glowing review for Malaysia that you would be interested in staying and not quite ready to leave. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's like my home away from home.
Oh, that's great. You mentioned a little bit earlier that being shy over there really wasn't an option in order for you to interact with the kids and interact with other teachers coming over. Do you think that that was something that you had to overcome and deal with, or were you already pretty outgoing?
I've always been fairly outgoing, but coming into a new environment, I felt like I had a lot to take in and observe and adjust to slowly. But as I was doing that, I realized that I could kind of expedite that process of getting to know each other and adjusting to not only the Malaysian culture, but also the culture of my school, if I was more outgoing and really just downright crazy and childish and silly in school and in the classroom, just to kind of laugh and have fun with the students and with the teachers. Again, just making myself as approachable as possible.
So, and you also mentioned that, you know, you're from a small town and then you originally moved to a small town, but now you're living in the big city. Do you think you've changed your preference at all on big city versus small town? And do you think living abroad has changed you in any other ways?
In terms of big city versus small town, it's hard to judge that because my small town in Malaysia is still rural, but is not as comfortable in terms of the amenities available to me and the entertainment options that my small town in the U.S. has. But I don't think that I really have a preference between the two. They both have a special place in my heart. Sorry, what was the second part of that?
I was just curious if there's any other ways that you've seen that maybe living abroad has changed you.
Yeah. Living abroad has definitely changed me, but I don't think that I've been home for long enough yet to fully be able to recognize that change. But my family tells me that I am much more laid back. And honestly, to succeed in the Malaysian culture, you need to be. I think that was part of adjusting, was just kind of running with the punches of life here. And just spending a year where my best friends were 15 years old kind of brought out the child at heart attitude. And so I think that kind of also plays into just being a little bit more laid back and flexible. Additionally, I'm definitely more open-minded than ever before. I think just the more people I meet, the more I learn. And I thought that I was open-minded once I graduated from college and then moved here and learned not only about the Malaysian culture and cultures of all of the people that I meet in Kuala Lumpur, but additionally, meeting 100 new Americans every year has made me realize just how much more of my own culture there is to learn about.
So you mentioned laid back. Is Malaysia one of those cultures where things don't really get done on the time that Americans think it should be done, and things kind of take a while whenever you're dealing with some service industry or something?
Yes, absolutely. And initially that the slow pace of time here was really frustrating to me. And now professionally, it sometimes is unbelievable how slowly things can move. And it can be stressful to the Americans in my office that I work with. But it's just something that we've learned to adjust to. And I think that once you kind of let go of that and realize that that's just the way things work here, then it's not as stressful anymore. And it's actually quite nice.
Yeah, we experienced that same thing when we were in Argentina, and it wasn't too bad for us. It was just, maybe when we're out to dinner or out to lunch, it's a much longer lunch than we used to, because, nobody's really, coming to check on us, or nobody's, in any hurry to get us anything we asked for, or things like that. But I've definitely heard horror stories from our friends in Argentina where one of them moved and it took him 3 months to get internet hooked up his house, even though he was basically calling them every day and telling them how important it was. And, he couldn't do his job without it.
Thank goodness for coffee shop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's frustrating.
I think at the same time, I did learn to be a little more patient too. And that, maybe it's just a American thing to be super impatient and want everything immediately.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that I've learned just to recognize things like that as different, not as weird or crazy, but just different. And I need to remind myself of that pretty regularly.
Yeah, it's just different perspectives about what's important at the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if you had to pick one piece of advice for our listeners, what would it be related to either living abroad or the Fulbright application process, just anything that your experience has made stick out in your mind?
I think that one of my biggest takeaways has been that there's so much to learn from the people around you. And before I moved abroad, my pace of travel was always trying to just check countries off or work through a bucket list. But now I've gained such a greater appreciation for the people and how much that kind of makes the place. And just taking the time to listen to someone and learn about their life and the way that they have experienced their own culture and being open to share that with you has been incredible. And so I think that no matter where you are, there's always a lesson to be learned from someone. And so taking the time to do that is really a great opportunity.
So are there one or two experiences with meeting new people that kind of stick out in your mind as something that you'll always hold on to or that you'd like to share?
A handful of the teachers that I worked with my first year here are just incredible working mothers that were so hospitable and willing to kind of take me in as an additional child, really, and make sure that my experience here was a positive one and that I was always cared for. And my family coming to Malaysia and having the opportunity to meet them was a really neat collision of my two worlds. But just talking to them about life and teaching alongside them and celebrating their various holidays together was an incredible experience that really were some of the highlights of my time here.
So it sounds like you really found a second home and a second family. That's amazing.
Yeah, definitely I did.
So when your family came to visit you, do you think you got any of them interested in the possibility of living abroad?
One of my sisters, actually I would say all of my family members love to travel and just experience the world and see new things and try new food. But living abroad isn't always a realistic possibility for everyone. But I think that coming to Malaysia and meeting my community was something that they really enjoyed and has made them realize how much more of the world there is to see. But I'm not sure that they'll ever live abroad. But they definitely caught the travel bug.
Cool. Well, I think that's all of our questions. So I don't know if you're into social media or Instagram or anything too much, but do you have anything you want to shout out, like Instagram, Twitter, website, or blog to let people find you online?
Sure. My Instagram handle is mherr, M-H-E-R-R 57. And I post a lot of pictures of the beach and of rooftops in Kuala Lumpur.
Yeah, I've certainly loved following your Instagram and seeing all those pictures. They're always so breathtaking and amazing.
Oh, thank you. It's been quite the adventure. Well, thanks, guys. I really enjoyed the opportunity to talk with you, and I would love if you ever have the chance in all of your own travels to make it over to Malaysia or to Southeast Asia.
Yeah, we would certainly love to, and thank you so much for doing this. We're really excited to be getting this off the ground, and so we appreciate you being one of our very first interviews.
Yeah, it was fun. More than happy to chat.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to our first interview and our very first episode. So, as we mentioned, be sure to follow Marcy on Instagram at mherr57, that's M-H-E-R-R 57. And while you're at it, follow us on Facebook and Twitter at ListenTL. And also, if you need any of the notes from the episode, any links we may have talked about, any websites or interesting things that we dropped during the interview, check that out at thinkingliberty.com/1. Those are the show notes. And thanks so much. Be sure to tune in for episode 2. We're going to be talking to a girl who just got through with a 5-month bicycle tour through Asia. So it's really interesting stuff, and I know you guys are going to love it. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to Thinking Liberty. Subscribe to the show for free on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher at thinkingliberty.com. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, articles by Zach and Sarah, and more. We'll see you next time.